Exciting news, the Planet Peterson store on Shopify is now open. Click the top link in the description to go to Shopify, where you can check out shirts, stickers, digital artwork, and more. Thank you.
So the reason why I'm about to make this particular argument, okay, is because earlier in the conversation, I heard you talking about probabilities. Now, there was one time that we began to have this discussion, and we actually got cut off. Like, all lives went started going down on TikTok. Do you remember that night?
No, that's happened to me several times, so.
Okay, yeah, so I just want to continue this, all right? So listen. Let's say that we're going to take any 12 English letters, all right? And I just picked a bunch of random ones right here.
Okay.
For every combination of these English letters that contains a meaning, like say this random sentence, each cupcake made me laugh, right? There are over 100 trillion ways of combining these same letters which do not convey a meaning. Now, the same thing happens to be true in the case of the DNA protein. So we're talking about nucleotides. We know that obviously these were arbitrarily labeled, right, by geneticists, right? G and C, A and T, we know that they pair together. But the point is that in the same way, this also happens to be a language, okay? So if we were going to take, say, a Hox gene or a homeodomain of, say, just 60 amino acids long, okay, for every combination that makes a functional protein, there are 10 to the 33rd power of ways that do not, okay? And that's a 10 with, you know, 33 zeros behind it. So The point becomes that given this math, it becomes highly unlikely that in the process of reproduction, a random search mutation, you know, the functions of Darwinian evolution will find things that produce the complexities we see versus ones that do not. So let me give you a solid example. All right, let me bring this to the fore a little bit. So for example, sponges do not have a nervous system, right? Sponges do not contain a nervous system. So what are the first animals to contain nervous systems? How did they get them? These are the types of evolution that we're talking about that must be true if really evolution as you propose it were to be true.
I got a book on that for you, actually.
Sure. Yeah, I'll check it out. So in a nutshell, what I'm saying is that when you were talking about probabilities, it
to me, it's just sort of problematic, man, because in one way, you're going to use it, I think, correctly. And you're going to be like, dude, the probability of such a thing being true is so low, right? It's like zilch. It's zero. But when we do the same type of reasoning to really discuss how evolution could produce the types of diversities that we see, now all of a sudden the probabilities don't necessarily matter.
What's the thing I say is impossible?
Pardon me?
What's the thing I say is impossible?
So basically the last or the second to last, maybe it was the third, guest had just made a proposition and you had basically said, listen, the probabilities of that being true is really low.
Oh, that was the endogenous retrovirus thing. Yep.
Yeah. So, and let's say that you're right. Let's say you're right. That's good reasoning. That's a good reason to be like, that is not the best explanation. And so I think in the same way, when we're talking about the chances of the known limits of evolution producing, say, things that have a nervous system when they didn't, is so extremely low, it's not the best explanation either.
Okay, so I don't want to talk about this. What do you think the odds of like a group of human beings with Stone Age tools inventing the automobile is? Like a functioning automobile?
Probably extremely low.
Like basically zero, right?
Sure.
But we do know that eventually human beings graduated from a more rudimentary system to a more complex system that was capable of producing automobiles, right?
Yep.
So, like, the thing with the amino acids or whatever, and this is like slightly different, but I think it's kind of similar because it's like proposing, well, what are the odds that that particular amino acid just kind of spontaneously evolves in, I don't know, in like a soup rich with the ingredients for it? Perhaps
Yep.
very low, but the first amino acids, or, well, it's actually proteins. Amino acids build the proteins. The first proteins would have been way more simple, which isn't as difficult. But the other thing with this was there's like multiple things. That analysis kind of says, here are all the ones that don't work, or here are all the combinations that aren't the combination of amino acids for the particular one we're looking at. And then the one that is, right? Or like if you have a lottery or if there's a raffle and they sell a million tickets, there's 999,999 other tickets and then the one winner, right? But like with the raffle, more than one ticket could have won, right? So with the protein thing, it's like, yes, what are the odds that this particular protein shows up, has this form? Perhaps very low. Does that mean life is statistically like it's like absurd that it could have arisen naturally? Well, no, because that assumes that that's the only protein that could have that particular function, which we know you can change the amino acid sequence of a protein and it still maintains the same function. And it assumes that the proteins we have today are the only kinds of proteins that could work for life, and I don't think there's really much of a good reason to say that that's the case. A comparable analogy would be like if you flip a coin 100 times in a row, you'll get a particular sequence. What are the odds of repeating the sequence that you did? They're basically impossible. But that doesn't mean that the sequence of flips you made was miraculous in any way. There's probably a couple other things, but I don't really remember at this point.
Okay, so the first thing I want to say is that in your example, talking about, early Homo sapiens, who, what are the chances they could build, a functioning vehicle or car, computer, something like that, right, being zero, your reasoning is definitely true. The issue, however, is that that's actually assuming that Homo sapiens, as you understand them to exist, being like Neanderthals, cavemen, etc., is true. So that's false because it's begging the question. I don't see it that way, and numerous other scientists don't interpret it that way. The
Interpret
second
what
problem.
that way?
So I'm just saying, like, your line of reasoning is true given that cavemen were essentially cavemen, right? And I'm saying that I don't actually accept that premise. If it were true, your reasoning is valid, right? But I don't. And so that's begging the question because it's assuming something that I don't actually even think is true to begin with.
You
The
don't think we
second
went through a
problem,
Stone Age?
well, actually, I mean, if you phrase it as a Stone Age, maybe I'd be more inclined, depending on what you mean.
By cavemen, I didn't mean Neanderthals. I meant very old humans, archaic humans, Homo sapiens humans.
Well, we can certainly discuss that particular point if you'd like. Just in the way that I phrased it, which, again, if we're going to sort of redefine it, could be wrong. But as I phrased it, it sort of be begging the question from my understanding. But the second thing that I would point out is that let's say that the second thing you said is also true. Let's say that, well, hey, we can change some of these arrangements, or rather, you could say there could be an arrangement that could still produce the same function in the past, right? Just a more primitive form, right? Let's say that's true.
I didn't mean in the past, I meant in the present.
Well, I think that sort of then becomes problematic then, because then what are you talking about? Because if there are a set of arrangements of these amino acids which produce a functioning protein, and there are an X amount of combinations that don't, then those are the ones that we're talking about, and my example still is
The
valid. I thought you said that in
point
a way
was
to
there's
say
more
maybe a
than
primitive
one.
form could exist that we just don't know about, right?
The point was there's more than one combination of amino acids that will produce the same function. That was one thing. And then the other thing, which is a separate argument, is You could have like completely different proteins that ultimately do the same thing, but there's also no reason to assume that the proteins we have are the only proteins that make life possible. So it's kind of completely different things.
Yeah, so I hope you understand, though, that even if, let's say, you rearrange them and it does the same thing, that's still a functioning protein. So that still doesn't defeat my argument, because my argument is actually saying, hey, you can combine them in ways that are functioning, and that's no problem. The issue is the vast number of ways that we know do not. So we're not talking about a rearrangement that can, we're talking about the number that doesn't, because the search space is so vast, it becomes highly unlikely that a chance mutation process would find that than not. That's what I'm saying. What do you mean, right? We only have the ones we know about. It seemed like you were really proposing a mystery, right? There could be a primitive form we just don't know about, right? That could produce the same result that we don't see today, right? Because we're later down the time of evolution. So if that's not the
primitive, the primitive form I was talking about was I didn't say this, but it would be true that a lot of the proteins that early life, for example, would have used may not be ones that are used anymore. That could be the case. But the bigger point was that they would have been simpler than the ones today. Like, the longest word in the world is chitin. And that's just an abbreviation of this protein that we have in our muscles that gives them elasticity. And it's like 186,000 letters long or something like that. Okay. That protein wasn't around when life first arose on our planet. It'd be dumb to think that it was. But I think gradualism allows you to get to a very long protein like that.
Okay. I think that's actually a good point, and I'll tell you why in a second why I think that. But first, I just want to point out the last thing that the reason I just don't see it the same way as you described it. And the reason why would be, I think you commit what's called a fallacy of a vending machine. So let's take your example of there being a million tickets and only one of them, is the winning lottery ticket. Okay. Probability does not change the more times an event is attempted. The probability remains the same. So for example, if you're flipping a coin and the chance is 1 in 2, just because you flipped it and got heads one time doesn't mean you now will get tails the second. The probability remains the same, and such would be in your example. If the probability is 1 in 1,000,000, it doesn't matter if you attempted it 900,999, times, the probability still remains 1 in 1,000,000. So I think this still promotes really why my argument, I think, is valid, that the best explanation would in fact be that it was not the product of something, chance-based, random mutation-based, any Darwinian mechanism, but in fact was intentionally done by something we would call God. Now, I want to clarify here, and this is why I think your first point was actually a good point. It could be that I'm wrong. That's of course it could, right? A chance mutation by chance could produce the functioning protein. That's correct.
We know that happens.
I'm just saying it's highly unlikely. And that's why I think appealing to God actually makes the most sense.
Well, that would just be an argument from incredulity.
In one way, yes, but not completely, because I'm still basing that off of the math.
I think it actually is very much so. Because it's not just that you're saying, like, we don't know how it would work with this particular mechanism. But the God hypothesis, there's also no explanation for how that even works. So even that's incredulable. We solve some sort of incredulity with a placeholder that itself is incredulable. Is that a word? I don't know if that's actually...
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that you do the same thing, though, when you appeal to, quote, simpler forms of life in the past. It's just the same thing. You're appealing to something you don't quite understand, but that could be an explanation of the evidence. The same thing is with God. Certainly, yeah. Is there a level to God that is appeals to incredulity in a way? Sure, it does, because, God is, in a way, is outside of our ability to question, right? Or to test, or, you know, to fill God in a test tube and measure it, right? However, it still follows from the reasoning that intentional creation is more likely than chance mutation, given the improbability.
I don't think you could assess the probability of one of them, but I think you've also mischaracterized the other, because it's not really chance. I mean, if you have a chemical system, it doesn't behave randomly, not really. Like, there are some random aspects of it, like there's some Brownian motion that's going on, and some other things. But, like, you know, scientists are able to create autocatalytic reactions. Prions, these proteins, like, I didn't even know this, but I knew prions existed. Those are like misfolded proteins in your brain. You can get them from eating other people's brains, or like mad cow disease. It's called Kuru in humans, or Creutzfeldt-Jakob syndrome or something like that. But prions are misfolded proteins, but they actually replicate themselves, which is crazy. I didn't know that. So we have simple molecules that are, yes, they're detrimental to our form of life, but, I mean, sorry, parasites, but parasites are successful. But these prions are randomly changed, mutated, and then they get folded in this unpredictable way. But it allows them to actually sort of be their own thing. I wouldn't call a prion alive, but it acts like something that's alive does in a creepy sort of way.
Yeah, so I do follow your line of reasoning, but I think there's honestly a lot related to that. I guess the fundamental problem I would find is that it's a Lamarckian issue. So let's say that you did in fact, let me appeal to this first. So you remember when I took those straws and I threw them on the ground? Remember that live? And I said, what are the chances it spells a word? Do you remember that?
Oh yeah, I remember that in that live. Okay. Yeah, my phone died.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I thought all the lives got kicked. When I got off, I didn't see anyone else live. That's what I thought happened. But all right. So then remember, the other guy came on and said, well, hey, wait a second, though. We're talking about living organisms.
Yeah. There's a selection bias sort of. Not even natural selection. It's just that the system, the chemical system, prefers certain things. And so it picks things. And that's what lets the system gradually build in complexity, and it appears to like be doing something for a reason, but it's just doing what it chemically prefers.
Yeah, exactly. So starting with that as a point, okay, let's take this back to your to what you just said. So if in fact it is alive, in these changes through, even again, it may appear as a chance mutation, but it maintains the functional proteins and passes them on and continues to build upon them. Let's take that then. Well, then wait a second though. Is that an acquired characteristic? Is that an acquired characteristic? Because if it is,
because I didn't understand what you meant, but now I think I do.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. No, I was just going to say that acquired characteristics cannot be passed on to their offspring. There were experiments done by a guy named Lamarck, and this includes even the fundamental basis of mutations. Absolutely it does. So we'd first have to define whether, let's say it's true. Again, let's say it happened. Is it acquired? Because if it is, then you don't have a way to actually pass it on.
Well, if it happens in
the organism.
Yeah, I mean, a bacteria, any change would be passed on because they only have one chromosome, right? They only have one set of DNA. But bacteria do weird things too. But with animals, if a change occurs in the germline cells, sperm or egg, then it will be passed on. And in a way that's acquired, but not in the sense that Lamarck thought. I have a really good book. I think it's called Lamarck's Revenge, actually, that you would probably like. It's about epigenetics.
Okay. Good field.
So stuff like that, we're pretty sure has happened because we're pretty confident that mammals, so not all mammals have a placenta, we're pretty confident that the placenta arose from a viral infection in germ cells that actually changed the genes in a way that started developing the placenta. I think that may have happened with the amnion too, if memory serves me correctly. I could be wrong about that, but so weird things like that have happened, but they're extraordinarily rare, and nobody thinks that that's like what guides or really is responsible for speciation.
Yeah, so I'm glad that you're actually aware of that, because that's certainly important to decipher whether that's valid or not, as if it would.
I gotta step away for 5 seconds to let my cat out.
Okay, do it up.
Hey,
what's up, chat? How you guys doing? While he's letting out his cat.
All right, she was staring at the door, and then I opened it, and she got scared. Just go out. Go in the living room. Go ahead.
I love cats. Cats are great.
There she goes. Okay.
Not to hate on dogs, but cats are very clean, and they're actually smart. Our cats walk with us, actually. They go for walks.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I like cats.
Isn't that crazy? So again, I'm glad that you actually know about that, because I actually think that's key to this debate, is if it is in fact related, you know, to whether it's acquired or not, because that affects whether it can be passed on. But anyways, I think the best way to demonstrate that it in fact wouldn't be considered an acquired characteristic in that sense would just be to give a working example. So let's go back to the first thing I said. So what was the first animal to have a nervous system?
Oh, I don't know. It probably would have resembled some sort of like flatworm sort of looking thing. You'd really like that, the book I told you about earlier. It's called Other Minds. It's actually written by a philosopher. And he talks a lot about cephalopods, like octopuses and cuttlefish, to try to get an idea of like how complex animal minds developed. But he goes through like evolutionary history, and he talks about how a nervous system could have developed. And what's really interesting, so I can give you, I can't tell you what the organism was, but he lays out a really excellent case of how a nervous system could have developed. So if you'll, like, if you're okay with me talking for like, I should be able to do it in about 90 seconds.
Yeah, I just looked up the book too. Let's hear it.
So like the idea is, we know that even very, very simple unicellular organisms have photoreceptive spots on them, right? It's just some pigmented area that can be sensitive to photons, right?
Okay.
So with something that's multicellular, you can have that too. Like you can have a patch of tissue, multiple cells that are like light sensitive, right? And from that, it can either through like through the endocrine system or whatever, like the nervous system just communicates by sodium and potassium channels and calcium ions pushing material around, and some neurotransmitters too. But anyways, there could be some sort of like signal conducting through chemical communication between cells, where like it could be an organism sitting in the water, and on the top it has photoreceptive cells, and it carries a signal into its body for whatever reason. We also know that organisms, simple organisms, will, you know, scoot around on the ground. Right? That was actually a lot creepier. And this is actually super creepy looking. Anyways, they'll scoot around on the ground, and there's a desire to have some sort of tactile sensation. But it can literally just be like cells that respond to like pressure or touch or whatever. And I don't remember 100% the way he summarizes this in the book. But what it does is eventually those two systems actually merge, because one is sending signals one way, one's sending signals the other way. And when the tissues that are involved with those kinds of things merge, then all of a sudden communication from multiple sensory areas connect. And that can be where a nervous system sort of begins to come from. He has this other, man, I had this actually really well thought out. No, I don't remember it. But he had this like thing where he talked about like animals reacting quickly. There was this strong evolutionary pressure for that. And I see things. I have a fish tank. Have you ever had fish? You're muted. I didn't do it. I swear I didn't do it. It wasn't me.
Oh, sorry about that. Yes, I have had fish.
Have you ever noticed that the slightest bump, like it doesn't even have to be on their tank, but like on the whatever table that their tank is sitting on, will make them just instantly dart?
So I want to say yes. I'm not sure if I've experienced it personally, but I think I've
It's
seen
like
what you're
if I could take my phone, I would go and show you, but it's crazy. I can literally just tap and they will instantly be able to respond to that because they're extremely twitchy like that. This doesn't really have a lot to do with the nervous system, actually, like where it comes from, so we can just forget that basically. But I don't know if you thought that that thing I laid out makes sense or not, but I thought it was actually extremely intelligent the way he laid it out.
Yeah, so I guess the first thing that comes to my mind is that if he's a philosopher, right, was there any science to back this up, or is it just like a thought experiment? Or I mean, thought experiments can be based on scientific principles, but that'd be the first thing I'm looking for if there are actually examples of that. Like, has
He
that been like
references
tested?
tons and tons and tons of studies in the book.
Okay.
In that part of the book, I don't remember off the top of my head if he talked about it. I did a long time ago. There was a TikTok video I saw where they thought that they found compelling evidence that nervous systems actually evolved twice. But I can't find that video, and I don't remember if any of that. I don't even know what the argument, what the evidence looked like. I
Okay.
saved it for later and then I lost it.
No, that's fine. So I'm totally fine saying, of course, that could be, right? If it lines up and it's been tested to say that this is certainly possible, right? If nothing else, I have no problem saying that. However, I think in our present day, the problem still remains. Because what we have are animals that possess fully functioning nervous systems, or they don't. We don't see any type of organism that contains a transitionary nervous system,
Oh, I think we
right?
do.
That's highly debatable because it's still again, it's fully functioning, right? If we're
Well,
talking
but
about
they'll have different
incremental changes
functions.
that
Something can't be. The way evolution works is there weren't animals in the past that had broken organ systems that didn't work, but if they just evolved a little bit more, they would actually start working. They're
False.
always
That's
fully
not
fu
true.
they're
That's the
always
whole
fully
theory behind
functional.
how birds evolved. False. That's totally
No.
false. Yes, it is. And that's
No.
also how it's theorized for how things crawled out of the water. Absolutely, it is, dude. I mean, look at Jurassic Park. It's absolutely a part of your belief system where you have some type of a land animal that's like half reptile, half bird. Absolutely. With wings that don't fully work.
But
That's
it's not, well,
100% a part of your theory.
but the wings weren't for flight is the point. Like you're right and I'm right, but it's because we mean this in slightly different ways. Raptors didn't fly, except for probably, was that Microraptor? Microraptor could glide. But they had feathers and didn't use them for flight, but eventually they got co-opted to be used for flight. But what I'm talking about, what the hell? Or we were talking about like the nervous system, whatever, or whatever.
Yeah.
There are different nervous systems, and they all function because an organism, there's no such thing as a half-evolved organism. Every organism that exists is fully developed. They function. They just have different
Yep.
functions, right? It's like, for
Exactly.
example,
That's my point, man. That does not support some incremental change
no,
because
it
both
does.
work just the same.
No, it does.
But
Because.
that's a leap, though, man. That's something that you must take purely based on your interpretation of the data. That like you like again, even if you're right, you can't merge that with the data. That's just as much as a creationist or a theist interpreting the data in light of themselves. Again, because if it's fully functioning, as you also concede to, then where's the increment?
I can tell you
Where
where
is
the
it?
increment is. Organisms that are so, like, if I say more primitive organisms, I don't mean like I just got done saying every organism is fully like evolved, developed, or whatever. What I mean is organisms who represent phyla that are more ancient, like flatworms, for example. Flatworms have been around for many hundreds of millions of years. They are older than vertebrates, for example, according to like mainstream science or whatever. They have eyes, but they're not as comp they don't have they're not as complex as ours. They don't have the same kinds of functions. And we see gradually like insect eyes, although like the compound eyes can be really crazy, they have a lot of parts. They're not really as complex or sophisticated or have as many functions as ours do. And then like the Nautilus has the pinhole camera type of eye, but it's a mollusk. Mollusks are much more ancient than like land animals are, obviously. Because and eyes are just an extension of the nervous system. Because we see different types of like vision in the animal kingdom, and the organisms that are like the most quote unquote primitive or whatever have eyes that are less complex, I think that actually very, very well supports evolution. Now, there are some that are evolutionarily ancient, like mollusks, but have actually complex and very good eyes. They have compound eyes like we do, but they work in a completely, well, not in a completely different way, but they work in a very different way. For example, their lens doesn't change shape like ours does. They have a spherical lens, and it just goes back and forth to focus the light.
Yeah, I read about those.
And their retina isn't backward like ours is. Stupid retina, I hate you.
Yeah. So it's funny that you're actually saying that, because that's what I'm thinking of. But there's one thing I want to clarify first. So I understand when you're saying, listen, we're both right. We're just saying something from a slightly different way. I'm glad you said that and you explained that, because I see why, how you perceived what I said. So let me modify it slightly. And I'll start with a question. So are there any flatworms that don't contain a nervous system?
I don't think so.
Okay, so here's the problem. When I'm saying fully functioning, I'm talking about functioning as an able to meet the need that it's proposed for. So to try and reverse this and speak from your side, then this would be like saying, you know, a butter knife is more primitive to a bread knife because one, you know, is sharper or something. Like, no, they both serve, they both cut, but they serve different functions. That's exactly what you said. They serve different functions. So that's not a sign of just then an increment. I don't think that qualifies as an increment. And let me also, to be fair, I don't just want to go on, but a bunch of things I want to tell you. Okay, so first, I can concede to you that there are some examples, though, that maybe don't work as much as in this way. Like, for example, there's like this frog I've heard of that has like a pair of eyes that do nothing. And it's like, what could this possibly even be for? I think it was a frog. Or like, I've seen some examples that
are... Is it a troglodyte?
Maybe.
Does it live in caves? Because
yes,
that would explain why. Oh, okay, well,
yeah,
it's better to conserve resources for some other organ.
Yeah, no, that I totally understand that. What I'm trying to say, though, is that I think from my perspective, those are harder to explain. So I can concede that what I'm saying may not be within like completely universal in interpretation. There are some things that I think are harder. However, that said, the basic principle I think remains the same. By fully functioning, I'm not saying, I'm saying that it's not an increment. There is no increment. If there was an increment, it wouldn't be fully functioning. That's like exactly the point. So if it functions, how did it happen? This goes back to my original argument.
Because it can gain function.
You need to explain how a chance mutation process could in fact produce, you know, through that vast search space of combinations of these amino acids and nucleotides, could somehow then, boom, now the flatworm has a fully functioning nervous system. Like, that's when the probabilities become so low, I think it's a problem. Now, last thing, let's also take your other example, though, about the fish. You say, well, hey, man, maybe it did happen quickly, was essentially what you were saying. And I'm very aware of this. It's called punctuated equilibrium. That's the idea, that some things where we can't see the increments could have just happened quickly. Okay. Totally fine. Again, I concede it could totally be possible, but it's not the best explanation, though. Like, there's a huge leap of faith in there that is just as equivalent to a God of the gaps. Absolutely.
Well, I wouldn't say that punctuated equilibrium is faith, because Gould came up with that by his reading of the fossil record. It wasn't that he said, maybe it actually works this way. And then he tried to make evidence fit that explanation. He came up with that idea from his interpretation of the evidence.
Oh man, I just don't see that the same way, Peterson.
Well, no, I don't want to get sidetracked on that because it's not super important. But there are things I wrote down because they're I got to bring these up. So
okay,
something along the lines of like, how did the nervous system go from like, how did it gradually acquire its complexity, or how did it co-opt new functions or something like that?
Yeah, because for example, ones that have them and those that don't. We don't see increments. Anything that has a nervous system fully works.
Today, that's kind of the case, although I would say we do have different nervous systems. But anyways, so I don't know if I could give you an example for nervous systems, but we do know that scales and feathers, for example, which are completely different types of, like, they're not really tissue. They're tissue,
no,
I guess,
no,
in
you're,
a way.
You're right. They come from a totally different combinations of the amino acids. You're right.
Yeah. No. But you can just, they actually come from the same genes. The same gene. You can manipulate them really subtly and make scales grow feathers, right? So gradually scales or like some sorts of changes caused feathers to arise from tissue that was originally growing scales. And so I think nervous system tissue can arise from tissues that were doing something kind of similar-ish, but also with a different function ultimately. Like it could have been some sort of weird endocrine thing that just changed into a conducting pathway and we have a nervous system or whatever. I couldn't make a very strong argument about where nervous systems come from, like histologically, but, for example, another thing that I think works is, actually a quick question. Do you care if Simon comes on or?
Yeah, I'd rather just be us.
That's fine. We know that some animals have photoreceptors, but they don't use it for vision, right? So for example, I actually kind of already talked about this, but some organisms have photoreceptive cells, but they don't use that to create visions in their brain. They just use it to detect light. Lots of amphibians and lots of reptiles and even some fish have a pineal eye, right? You know what that is?
Yeah. And octopuses are also very unique too.
Yeah. So we have examples of tissues in the body that do something similar to, they're photosensitive, they're photoreceptors technically, which is what rods and cones are. Your pineal gland actually does have rods and cones in it, I'm pretty sure. Or your pineal gland parietal eye, sorry, which your pineal gland does have rods and cones in it, funny enough. So I think that's an example where we have something that the parietal eye or whatever is probably more primitive in a way. The earliest, like the animals before they could see things probably had photosensitive cells that just detected changes in light intensity. And that can have lots of different, there can be huge numbers of reasons for that. For example, UV radiation causes, we use it to sterilize things. So organisms in the water, if they're detecting high levels of UV radiation, which is damaging to your DNA, they'd swim down to deeper waters and be protected, right? For most land-dwelling animals today, the only thing that really does is detect when the sun is rising and setting, so it helps with their circadian rhythms, right? And the idea that that could gradually change, I don't think is really too far-fetched.
So I understand what you're saying, and it's certainly observable. Like, that classifies as evidence. However, I would still point out that that's really not telling you anything about the origin of the structures, man. Just because these structures share...
evidence that it... changes gradually, so why could it not have appeared gradually?
Let me explain why this is a leap in logic, okay? Just because these structures share somewhat similar molecular pathways, you know, or patterns, does not mean that they share a common ancestor or that they were produced in the way that you say. And honestly, I think there are huge differences between these appendages that I think you really haven't necessarily talked about. And I think it's like, if zebra fishes have scales, there's no other reason than to think that they are scales, all right? If birds have feathers, then there's no reason than to say that what they were supposed to be, what they are now, are feathers. I mean, dogs have fur. It was designed to be fur. Humans have hair. It's for hair. Like, these structures are not changing into anything else. Mere similarity of the patterning pathways, right, in the development does not imply some sort of common ancestry between the two structures. And again, if we come back to the biology,
that's exactly what it does.
No, that's an interpretation of the data, dude. When it comes down to the data itself, again, you must imply your worldview upon it. It doesn't, it's not like necessitated. No,
it's not 100% post hoc because, again, the idea that birds are the descendants of dinosaurs, that was Darwin's idea. That idea is extremely old. And he proposed that there would be fossil evidence that would conform with it. And to a lot of people, Archaeopteryx is extremely good evidence that conforms with it. The prediction came before we found that. The idea about birds evolving from dinosaurs also was before we even knew that dinosaurs had feathers. That's really only since like the really early 90s been a thing that we knew. And the experiments about modifying scales to grow feathers, that was something we did in the modern age. And
yeah, but Peterson, you're jumping in your logic, man. If dinosaurs had feathers, then there's no reason to think that they didn't serve a purpose but as feathers. Like, you're saying
feathers
that this
have
is
multiple purposes, though.
Yeah, no, that's fine. They could have multiple purposes. But there's no reason then to imply that something, again, that may contain a similar structure came from one or the other. And again, if we come down to the biology of how you say this happens, you can just pick which one better fits the idea. This is why I totally disagree about what you said about Stephen Gould's idea about punctuated equilibrium. He proposed it directly, not because of what he found in the fossil record, but because of what he didn't find, Peterson. That's why he proposed these gaps were due to...
Well, yeah, but that's still equilibrium. Looking at the evidence and coming up with an explanation. Like, if I go to if I go to Africa and I find no penguins,
right.
I'll say penguins don't live in Africa.
I'm missing it. Say it again.
I said if I go to Africa and I find no penguins, I'll say penguins don't live in Africa. Actually, I think there are some penguins that actually go to Africa.
Okay, all right.
But that's a data-driven conclusion. And he looked at the fossil data and he said,
"Oh my gosh.
it's not as gradual as maybe people think. It's more of a punctuated."
Okay. So tell me, is it also reasonable to say that they share common structures because they were made by a common designer? Is it reasonable to say the homologous structures are a sign of a homologous creator? Is that reasonable?
It's not like logically absurd or anything. It can be logically consistent, but it doesn't make
you're
any predictions and it doesn't
thing.
Have any
you're
testability.
The exact same, but from the opposite point. Like, you're like, dude, he's just looking at the data. He didn't see fossils, so he said punctuated equilibrium. How freaking convenient, Peterson, that when the evidence is there, you just cite it. But when it's not there, you just make up a theory to explain why it's not there. And, oh, it's just you're following the data. Like, it's
that's
no
how,
different, dude.
But that's precisely what we do a lot of the times. We when we try to solve murders, we rule out suspects based on the data. This data is consistent with the idea that these things didn't happen.
Yeah, I follow your line of reasoning. I'm just saying that doesn't therefore make it true. So it's convenient that you're able to appeal to any narrative, which are very different, to fit the whole general idea. You're just like,
but my ideas are consistent.
Fit the narrative, right? And you're saying, look, it fits. Yeah, great. But you still had to carve
that out. Yeah, but they all fit. they all fit very well. The fossil record, the fossil record and gaps, genetics and
so many anomalies, tons of problems. The mainstream idea on the fossils is ridiculous, man. Ridiculous. What does that mean? Talk about Archaeopteryx, there's like less than 10 of those ever found.
So, in fact, it only takes one.
Plagiarized. There's a guy in China who made a ton of money faking one of them.
It's possible.
True. Happened. Look it up. Okay. Like there is so much shady business in fossils. You find thousands of dead animals in the ground.
What the fuck is this elephant thing? I've never seen that before. What? That was, sorry, I've never seen that before.
No, that's fine. I'm glad you weren't laughing at what I said. It was the elephant. I'm just saying, there's so many other interpretations of the data that to me make far more sense. And this is exactly what I was saying with my probability argument, is that when you're weighing these ideas, even if both are possible, that doesn't mean each is more or likely to be possible. And so I think given, again, the vast anomalies and issues and ideas with coming up with how a change like the nervous system could have happened is best explained by a designer. That's my position.
But what can the designer actually explain that isn't post hoc?
I'm sorry you feel that way, but there's many things it can explain. So for one, I just told you that it can explain homologous structures. Also, it can explain how even in genetics, but any information exists at all.
I asked a very dumb question, apparently. So, you can claim it, but what validation does it... What's your method for validating it?
So, there's...
Because if the only method is saying that, there are problems with what you believe in, your hypothesis does not become more correct when mine fails to account for specific things.
That's true. I'm actually sort of confused as to why you're asking it. My point is that if you can show based on probabilities of an event being far less likely, sure, that doesn't mean therefore my option must have taken place. It just means it's the most reasonable. That's all that I'm saying.
But on what grounds is it more reasonable?
Dude, why are you asking that? Based on the mathematical probabilities, again, the same thing as the English language
is true
of genetic information. There are only so many combinations which create functional proteins, okay, that build up all the functions we're talking about, like a nervous system.
Yeah, okay? we went over that.
The chances of this coming about through the means of Darwinian evolution, to be specific, is not the best explanation. It's highly more likely.
How does creation work, and why is it more likely? Because I could just say the odds that the creator created the amino acid sequence in the perfect order required for it to actually function is the same.
So because
it's the same number of proteins and it's the same amino acid sequence. The odds that your creator put those things together just right is the same.
So you're not really wrong.
Oh, thank you.
If you just boil that down to simplicity, no, you're of course you're right. And I thought I actually conceded earlier that when you're appealing to God, it does pose many other questions, right? And that's why they call it the God of the gaps. I fully understand. So in that sense, you're not really wrong. However, that basis alone doesn't therefore follow that my position is less reasonable than yours. No, it absolutely is still more reasonable that this is how it happened.
To the point where we've decided what made it more reasonable. If I said, what are the odds that I win the 100-meter dash at the Olympics next year or Noah Lyles? I can't remember what his last name is. What's more likely, me or him? Well, if we look at just me, we can come up with a ton of reasons why it's very unlikely. Although in high school, my PR was about 11.2. Today, I can't run anywhere close to that fast. I have no idea how fast I can run. Now, if we were just looking at that, we wouldn't be able to say how likely it is that something like this other particular, like if I just said Schmitty Warbin Jaegerman Jensen will win, well, it's more likely that Schmitty Warbin Jaegerman Jensen will win. Okay, but how fast is Schmitty? Well, you're not fast enough to win. Yeah, but how fast is Schmitty? Yeah, see, the thing is, you're not very fast. You're not telling me about Schmitty. And the problem that's going on here is Schmitty was number one, so that's a good argument for why. But the problem is, like with the creation thing, like, okay, so naturalism, how could it have gotten things exactly right? Maybe it couldn't have. Therefore, creation is better. Why? How does creation work? Well, yeah, naturalism just fails. You're not telling me anything about the alternative idea.
So, I totally can tell you about all you want to know about the idea, but there's a few things that I just want to propose, though. Okay, number one is that I've been clear at when everything that you said that I think is observable, it's true, it's science, and where you're merely applying an interpretation. Okay, I've been very clear, and that's not an accident. I'm using that word on purpose because really, Peterson, we have the same data, the exact same data. I don't have some special earth because I'm a creationist. I have the same exact one, the same dirt, the same air, the same water, right? So that's why the interpretation, I think, becomes key, because it can be explained different ways. And that's why I pointed out that, dude, you can just choose which one you want, whether it's, you know, it happened fast and punctuated equilibrium, or it happened as it's traditionally thought over millions of years. You can just pick which one you want to fill that gap. Now, to your point about, well, hey, just because you point out this is improbable doesn't mean you said how probable yours is. Now, you're technically right. So what I will do is I'll merely characterize it as a deductive argument. Ready? So the explanation for a nervous system, like we've talked about, is either because of Darwinian evolution or it's because of a creator. By characterizing only these two as an option, I can then do something which is reverse that probability, Peterson. So if the probability of evolution being the source of how these mutations took place is 1 in a million, well, then I can just say the probability that God did it is 1,000,000 to 1.
I can hear everything you're saying. Don't worry.
It's hard for me to listen with that purring noise. Okay, it's very cute.
Sorry, but I had to. What? That was very.
What's
rude.
His name?
I don't know. It's a girl. The adoption agency. Her name was Latte, and I'm like, I don't like that name. some of the proposed ones that I like are Stella, and I like Luna. I think Luna's a cool name.
Luna's cool after the moon. She is white.
No, that's not a very graceful. Anyways, do you want to keep going with your thing or?
Well, I just don't know if you heard me. So listen, if I shape it as a deductive argument, it was either God or it was evolution as you understand it. Those are the only two options. Then what I can do is reverse the probability and answer your objection, which would be, if the probability of it happening through evolution is 1 in 1 billion, then if the only other option is God, then the probability that God did it is 1,000,000,000 to 1. So for your objection to be valid at this point, Peterson, I think you would have to present a third possibility. So if it wasn't evolution and it wasn't God, then what was it? And if you can't come up with anything, then you must concede that, in fact, I can correctly reverse those probabilities, right? It's way more likely God did it.
1,000,000,000 to 1 doesn't mean that the odds are. So if I say something is, the odds of something happening are 1 in 10, and you say, well, the odds of mine are 10 in 1, that doesn't mean that yours happens 9 times out of 10 and mine happens 1 time out of 10.
Yeah, that's correct. But we can still, like, that's still possible. You can reverse a probability to talk about the likelihood of something happening. In fact, you could technically just break the math down and create it sort of fractional, and it would say the same thing. It wouldn't matter.
We need somebody who's smarter on numbers for that, because I don't think that's right. But I'm not going to tell you.
Absolutely, that's done all the time. all the time.
I mean,
yeah, you've never heard someone say the chances of something happening is like 1,000 to 1. You've never heard that before.
No, I've obviously heard that before. I'm talking about the thing where you said if I reverse it, mine becomes more likely, and you must concede. I don't think that makes any sense, but
Well, obviously, like, we're limited to just what we're talking about, not in the grand scheme. I'm saying on this topic, right? We're talking about the probability of something like a nervous system, right? Yeah. So if I'm saying, hey, I think based on the math of amino acids, the chances of it not happening are 10 to the 33rd power. I showed you the number, okay? And the only other option is God, then that's how God becomes more likely. And so you're saying, well, wait a second.
Yeah, I don't understand where you got numbers for God.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's
my point.
Where did you get numbers for God? Again, I think somehow what's happened here is you've said yours has become more likely because of how unlikely mine is without a method of how to actually calculate yours.
No, it's the same thing. By calculating yours, I am calculating mine. That's the whole point, man. I told you, we have the same Earth, the same amino acids. Yes, it is, man. Because, again, and if it's not, then what you have to do is demonstrate anything else it could have been other than God, a creator, an intentional mind.
It could have been any kind of God or several of them.
That's fine. That's totally fine. But that's still in favor of my position, though. Again, you're acting like it's unreasonable.
Any position is the problem.
No. So I think that what you're doing is just not thinking it through. If we're testing the probabilities of amino acids, right, and we're saying, hey, what are all the combinations that don't do anything? Or even if they're harmful, that's a whole other set, like harmful mutations. What are the probabilities of this? Then we can conclude that if it wasn't by chance, it must have been on purpose. That's what we call God. Like it falls naturally.
Well, I don't think it happened by chance, but I don't think it happened teleologically. I think it happened because chemistry has to obey certain rules or whatever. I feel like we're kind of stuck at this point, and we have been talking for 57 minutes and 11 seconds. So you want to just pick this up some other time? We'll be right back.